Todd is really sensitive if I don't give him enough space.
Welcome to the Exploring Washington State podcast. Here's your host, Scott Cowan.
This episode is sponsored by Thing. The Seattle Theater Group and Sasquatch Festival founder Adam Zaks present Thing. From August 26th through the 28th at historic Fort Warden in Port Townsend, you can enjoy a vast musical lineup, including Jungle, Modest Mouse, Father John Misty, and many more. The Thing Festival features two primary stages overlooking the Puget Sound, not to mention a variety of camping and parking accommodations. You can either book a one-day or three-day pass, and kids 12 and under are free, making this an event for the whole family. Come enjoy live music, art, and beautiful Fort Warden with us. To find out all the details, visit thingnw.org. Welcome back to this episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast. My guest today is Chris Thomas. Chris is a Seattle area artist who we found, I think, to be fair, Chris, I think we found you because of your Instagram channel. Someone on the team thought what you were doing was pretty cool, passed it along to me. We're looking it over. It's like, hey, this is cool. And this seems like an interesting story. So, Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell the audience, tell them about you. Let's go that way.
Well, I live in Seattle. And I wasn't born here.
Wait, we're done. If you're not a Washington.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, sorry. Just kidding. Don't mind me.
Was originally raised in Renton, Washington, but moved out to Seattle for school back in, like, I think that was 2014. So it's been a while now. And, you know, initially didn't really know what I was going to do. Eventually got a history degree. I know that doesn't make sense with what I do.
Well, you went to the University of Washington, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Go Cougs.
Go Dogs, but, okay. You know, it's okay. but I did study some architectural design while I was there because I've always been fascinated with architecture. And I took on some drawing skills. I've always been super into art, whether it was drawing, coloring, whatever, you know, ever since I was really little. Mm-hmm. And kind of learned some more technical skills and really didn't do anything with that for a while after I graduated. I graduated in 2019. And after that, I just kind of, you know, just was doing random jobs here and there. Worked at a law firm as a file clerk for a while. And finally decided to do art full-time actually this year. Okay. But my whole art story kind of started in late 2019 with like a wine and paint night with my cousins. And we were just kind of doing it for fun, and we were doing it probably every other week or so. And I just found that I really missed creating art. And so I kind of delved more into that and kind of just taught myself skills, watched some YouTube videos, watched a lot of Bob Ross.
Do you make happy little trees?
Oh yeah. I make lots of happy little trees. And just went from there, and I kind of discovered my own style. Because initially I was doing a lot of landscapes and kind of utilizing some of that architectural design technical skills. So I was doing a lot of like perspective and whatnot. But kind of I've always been interested in space. And so I wanted to do some more space related stuff. And I've always also been interested in kind of the surrealist aspect, kind of that style. Mm-hmm. And I kind of combined those two. So got like my own surrealism space kind of style going on, and that's where that came from. So that's yeah, how I got to that. And at one point I was like looking at through the camera at one of my paintings, and I had the negative filter on, and I thought, you know, that looks really cool. looks really cool in the negative. I want to paint it that way. And so I did that. So I painted a piece in a negative color palette so mm-hmm. that when you look through it, a filter, it looks like normal, like a normal color. And that's really when my art career kicked off, is when I started posting that on social media. That's when people really were like, whoa, this is cool. And I was like, yeah, it is cool.
Well, first off, my condolences for being a file clerk in a law office. I can't imagine a more soul-sucking existence. So good for you for breaking those chains.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely, I had a little bit of that soul sucking for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I got out.
So the wine and art, you know, gatherings, were these yeah. just around at somebody's home, or were you doing it at an establishment that had those type of events, or?
We were just doing that at each other's houses.
Okay.
Just meeting up every week or every other week and having some drinks, doing some paints.
I've got to imagine that the combination of wine or adult beverages of any sort
uh-huh.
and paint might have led to carpet cleaning.
There was probably some carpet cleaning.
I was going to say yeah. this sounds like this sounds to me like a messy endeavor just waiting to happen.
Well, luckily we had a lot of supplies to make sure that we didn't get the carpet completely covered. But
okay. look at if you're renting, go to the landlord. Look at the painting we did on your floor, Mr. Landlord. You know,
no, oh, yeah, we just wanted to decorate.
Yeah. Well, art is one of those things that, from the outside looking in, that you know, there's this phrase, and it's like called a starving artist. You know, there's a lot of yeah. people that try to do art of just any genre, right? Whether it be, you know, popsicle sticks glued together into, you know, little dioramas or fine art or anything like that. And it almost seems like to me that in many cases, the word starving doesn't necessarily equate to lack of talent. Or, you know, you can be very talented and make no money. Or you can be like Thomas Kincaid. That man, whether you liked his artwork or not, from a business perspective, you got to admire that he was able to sell billions of dollars of his art at local yeah. malls across America. I mean, it was amazing to watch this. And then you mentioned, you know, Bob Ross. Sorry.
I'm Thomas. He's
yeah,
Ross.
Sorry. Anyway, you know, Ross, this guy seems more popular after he's passed than he did when he was alive.
Yeah, that's very true.
And he's on everything. Somebody sent me as a joke for my birthday, they sent me a tin of like Altoids, but it was in with him on it. And, you know, I was like, what the heck?
I've got those very same Altoids.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and so here's been this commercialized thing. So, You said something that I thought was really interesting, is that you are making a full-time living doing art after a very short period of time, frankly. I mean, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I'm just warning you that we're going to come back to that. Okay. Not, you know, but just.
Oh,
but
yeah. No worries.
Warning you. Dare I say, maybe even threatening you that we're going to come back to that. but as I'm reading your bio, and so this is where my brain goes. You know, UW, architectural design, getting into history instead. And then you say, I met my fiance in 2018.
Yep.
And now you tell me you're a self-employed artist in 2019.
No, 2022 is when I was self-employed.
You see what I'm saying?
Artist.
It's helpful to have a supportive partner, isn't it?
Absolutely. She is a huge part of why I can do this in the first place. She's really the breadwinner and has been for the entire time I've known her.
What does she do?
She works at a prosthetics and orthotics clinic in Northgate.
Oh, okay.
And she is the office manager, and she actually has some bigger responsibilities now as well. And she manages some of their other locations in other states. She kind of got like a little raise in a salaried position, which is nice.
Okay.
But yeah, without her support, there's no way I could do this.
Right. And then when was the last time you updated your bio? Because what I'm about to read, these things are fluid sometimes. So
it's probably been a hot second since.
So do you still have two cats?
Oh yes, we still have two cats.
Still have the Siberian Husky?
Yep. Yep.
Coda. What about the geckos?
We still got the geckos. They're going strong.
And the fish.
The fish, on the other hand, those ones might not be around.
They might not be around. Okay. The fish that were not named in the bio, by the way, folks. They're like the red shirts on Star Trek? Those characters that the guys that always died.
The ones that always,
kind of like how fish are. Yeah. You got it. Yeah, I had a fish today. It was gone tomorrow, type thing. So, YouTube training. You had some, interest in art, but you've never had any really real formal training other than architectural drawing. So one of the things you also said though is your first art was landscape related for the most part because you were drawing on perspectives. Yes. And all that. Did you find those pieces to be more clinical versus artistic? Were you drawing more on the architectural drawing than you were on being artistic?
Well, when I was in my architectural design classes, yes, that was definitely more clinical. Later on, when I was just doing the landscapes,
mm-hmm.
I was doing those because I've always loved landscapes. I obviously watched Bob Ross a lot, and that's pretty much all he does.
Right.
Is landscapes. And so that was the initial inspiration for those. Like, yeah, I want to do some of my own. And I used acrylics instead of oils, but mm-hmm. Still could use some of the same kind of techniques that he used. But I still enjoyed them. It wasn't like a clinical process for me to do those landscapes.
Just curious if it was, as we go through that artistic journey where you find your voice, your vision.
Yeah.
Help me out here. You just said something, and I know just enough to not know anything. And that is, Ross was using oils, but you used acrylics. Why the choice for acrylics? Was it simple economics that oil paints are expensive?
That and then also just the drying. Mm-hmm. So oils take forever to dry. And there are definitely pros and cons of each medium.
Mm-hmm.
Oils, for one, you can blend them out and you can really get like a really nice sheen. But the drying process is just so long. Like it can take months to years to dry depending on how thick the layers are on your canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas acrylics, you can slap down a layer and it'll be dry within like 20 minutes and then you can keep painting over it. So for our wine and paint nights, acrylic is perfect.
Right, right.
It's also water soluble, which is super nice. Because if you get oil on the carpet, that's going to be really, really hard to get out. You're going to need to use like paint thinner or something,
rather than just water. Destroy the carpet too. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So what's your preferred medium today? Is it still acrylics?
Yeah, today it's still acrylics. For me, I use higher quality acrylics now than I used to, of course. Okay. But for me, it's still just that drying time. It's really nice. I can just kind of slap down a layer and I can add details over the top of it. I have worked with oils and I've worked with other mediums as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to work a little more with oils just to practice and get better. But acrylics are always going to be my main medium. That's just what I use, what I'm good with, what I know. And that's what most of my, probably like 95% of the pieces I've made are with acrylics, I think.
Okay. And so I've just so you know, this is where we're shifting gears, just warning you. I'm on your website still, but I'm looking at some of the pieces that you have for sale.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of these are prints that I'm seeing. But one of the questions I have and I haven't looked too much yet, so this might be really glaringly obvious and I just haven't looked. Typically, how big are the pieces that you're working with? What size paintings are you doing?
So it really ranges, but I tend to do my smallest size being like an 11-inch by 14-inch canvas.
Okay.
And then the largest canvas, I believe, was 30 by, it was like 3 feet by 4 feet, basically.
Okay.
But the average canvas size that I work on is probably 16 inch by 20 inch. And that's a pretty average size painting anyways. But that's kind of my preferred size, because you can get a lot of detail in, but it's not so massive that it's a huge undertaking, which is nice.
Have you ever thought about doing something, you know, on a massive scale?
Oh, absolutely. I think about it all the time. I've actually got a couple big canvases just waiting to be painted, and I just haven't thought of what to add to them yet.
Okay. Well, I'm putting you on the spot. What do you think it'll be?
It's definitely going to be space related. Could be my classic floating islands in space with some planets in the background, maybe have an astronaut in there. I don't know if I would do a negative piece that large. That feels like, I don't like the appeal of that being so big. It'd probably just be in like a normal color palette.
Okay.
Definitely with acrylics. Yeah, that's what I've got envisioned. But definitely no like set concept.
Let's just, because we're talking hypothetical.
Yeah.
How long do you think, from a tech, now a lot of my questions will probably be very technical, not artistic, no, which is, you know, I understand the artistic part of this could totally derail this question, but a massive canvas, how long do you think it would physically take you to do that?
Probably anywhere from 60 to 100 plus hours. Because my smaller canvases, it really depends on how much detail I'm putting into them.
Right.
But say the 16 by 20 inch, those usually take me a little over 40 hours. So I'm just kind of thinking in general, like that's probably about a good time frame, is anywhere from 60 to 100.
I think that's one of the things I think people that are looking at art.
Yeah.
Overlook is the amount of time that it takes for a piece of art, whether it be a painting or a sculpture or macrame. The time that it takes to, and I'm not talking about the time that you spent like with your sketchbook noodling out ideas. I'm talking about the idea that you know, the time that you say, here's the canvas on the easel, I've got my paints, I'm going to work. That time, from that clock going, not the creative process of like even conceptualizing what you're trying to do, but just the physical act of creation, the work, is very time consuming in most cases. You don't just slap together a painting. You don't just tie a bunch of knots together and go, here's a plant, you know, plant holder. I need some new artistic examples. I gotta move past macrame. That was like the 70s. So anyway, and people, like, there's some people in Seattle that do some pretty cool stuff with like recycled items.
I've seen that.
You know, you think about the time that they would spend gathering those items and then trying to find the right place for them. You know, like, I'm going to do with this, you know, where's this going to go and that. And so I, you know, that's always something I think is interesting for artists. But on your page, you've got some originals, but you've got a lot of prints, which I think then makes art accessible to the masses, because you can duplicate it. You can replicate it. The costs are lower. And thus somebody gets something interesting impulse buy price, right? They go, oh, I like that. They just buy it. Absolutely. Versus, oh, the original that's 3 foot by 4 foot, where would I put that? And also, how do I afford it? Walk me through the process of your prints. How do you go about having those created?
Yeah, so my prints, like you say, are a much more accessible option, and that's exactly why I want to have them, is because I know art is a luxury item. So it's really nice when you can go to an artist's website and be like, I can't afford an original, but I would really like your art and I would like to support you. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're like, oh, they have got prints, which are a much cheaper option. And for me, how I go about making those is I'll take my camera and I'll take really nice photos of my original piece. And I've got all these like lights that I set up, so they got the lighting all correctly. Mm-hmm. And then I will upload the picture to my computer and I'll edit it, make sure that it's all correct, so it kind of reflects the real life photo, or mm-hmm. the real life, not photo, the real life painting. And make sure that the settings are all correct. And then I will upload it to, so the website that I go through is called catprint.com. And so I don't go to like a local print shop. I've always worked with Catprint. They just have super high quality stuff. They've got lots of different options like prints, posters, other merch, but mostly mm-hmm. I just do the prints and posters. And of all the print companies that I've gone through, they have just impressed me the most because they also use sustainable packaging and recycled packaging. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I will even reuse their packaging to send out, say, original prints or original paintings and prints, because it's good quality stuff. And usually I'll do like anywhere from 15 to 20 prints of each size for a piece. Mm-hmm. And then I'll sign them all and number them.
Okay.
Because usually it'll be like a limited print run. And I won't really order another like print run unless it's super demanded. Like it's a high demand print. People are asking me all about it. They want more. And I've done that a few times. And I'll make sure to write that on the print. Be like, this is the second edition of this.
Give me an example of one that's been super popular for you.
So the ones that I do in the negative color palette, those ones are generally pretty popular. One of my recent ones called Negative Voyage, I just recently replenished that on my website. I ordered more of that one. I just ordered a bunch more this morning, actually, when I woke up. And let's see, I think there was another one recently, but it was one of the normal color palette ones. Probably Spacing Out, I think that's what it was.
Oh, that's cool. So help me out here. So I'm looking at Negative Voyage.
Yep.
And that's cool. That's very cool.
Thank you.
Double-sided prints.
Yep.
What's going on there? Is it the same image, just inverted on the other side?
Correct. Yeah. So for the double-sided prints, those ones are always my negative ones. I try to make them double-sided because a lot of times people will comment and they're like, "Oh, I would love a print, but I want the inverted one." I thought, well, good thing my prints are double-sided. You can hang it up whichever way you want. I've even had people hang them in like those glass floater frames,
mm-hmm.
So that they can kind of like switch it around so they can see okay. whichever one they want, or they hang it from the ceiling and kind of have it spin around. I was like, that's pretty cool. I like that. And that's, I've always done that with my negative ones just so people can enjoy both sides, both versions of it.
You didn't know this was going to like be a business podcast, because now I've got businessy questions to ask you. So I'm once again, we're still referring to Negative Voyage, and
yeah.
at the time that we're recording this, what I'm reading is on your website. It may not be there when somebody listens to this episode in the future. So
yeah, it's very possible it could be sold out right. by then.
So your pricing.
Uh-huh.
An 8.5 by 11 is $25 plus shipping. Correct. 11 by 14 is $40 plus shipping. And that's for a double-sided piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell you you're not charging enough, but that seems highly affordable. First off, it seems very approachable for a double-sided piece of work. But the thing that I'm actually really questioning you on, seriously, from a business standpoint, $5 shipping? Really?
Yeah.
Dude, you're losing money. I mean, how are you shipping these things for $5 in the US? Because we ship our water bottles.
Uh-huh.
So we have an Explore Washington State water bottle right now, and it's with the five tallest peaks in Washington State. And that's costing me over $8 to ship that bottle every time.
Oh, wow.
And that's USPS. We do priority mail. It's like 804 is the cheapest I get it for.
Well, for my prints, the way I package them, so I usually have like cardboard on each side of the print, and then I put them in those like rigid mailers.
Right.
And I'll send it out that way, and I have yet to have it over $5 in the because I do it USPS, just the priority mail, and that's.
I think my post office is ripping me off, man. They're looking at me going, "Here's a sucker. Let's charge him more." I mean, that's okay. So $5 shipping is just crazy good too. So kudos on you. Okay. So in this one, I'm going to go through this line by line now. So it's a negative voyage, double-sided prints, $25 to $40. Double-sided prints of my acrylic painting, negative voyage, limited print run of 15 prints per size, all signed. So you're only doing 15 of this one. Now,
correct.
You might do run 4 or whatever, and you'll clearly mark it like that.
Yep.
But one of the things that you're not saying here is you're not saying you're signing them.
That's true. I do generally include it in the picture, but that one.
Well, I see where you signed it, you know, C. Thomas 2022.
Yeah.
But are you actually, you know, taking pen to paper, if you will, and, you know, writing it out on there as well?
Yep. Like, I can show you an example of one of my prints here. I don't know if they'll see it on the podcast.
Well, the podcast, they won't see it, but.
But yeah, I just kind of like, I say what the print is, I write the date, and then sign it, and then the number, just like that.
So, for example, over my shoulder, that thing you can't really see because the camera's focused on me, but in the audience isn't going to see because it's just audio. But that's a printer's proof from an event that the Jerry Garcia Band played, I think, in 1980. And so there's... How familiar are you with, like, poster art, like, from that era? Are you familiar with that stuff at all?
Probably not very much, honestly.
Oh, that's fine. Well, like, back in the day, if you go look up, like, album art from the 70s, you'll see, like, if you go look at Yes or Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, they had these kind of surrealistic art covers that there was two artists in the Bay Area that were very prolific in this kind of genre. And people will pay a lot more money for a signed art piece than they will just the, you know, the print run. So that's a printer's proof, and it's signed. And I got it, you know, online at a poster place in San Francisco a few 10 years ago or so. Where I'm going with this is that actually I think you signing the work is, and telling somebody that you're signing the work is maybe for somebody who's likes your work. I mean, this isn't strictly a business thing, but people like your work, they're buying it. But if you ever blow up, and dare I say, we have Chris Thomas on Altoid tins or Chris Thomas socks or whatever, you know, now somebody go, I have a signed print from 2022 before he was on that podcast. That's where I found him. And, Bob, you know, I'm being, you know, humorous, but I think you should definitely say you're signing these things if you're not. And I'm only looking at this one, so I haven't gone through, you know, cart by cart items. So.
No, you're totally right. I should be noting that down. I think that's pretty important because it might be higher coveted if I actually say that.
And the other thing is that, even though they're buying the print, if you're signing it, it's still an original. It's an original signature.
Of course, yeah.
Like, it's like having somebody's autograph.
No, you're very right. It's weird to think of it that way at this point, but...
Well, I mean, okay, so who is your favorite actor?
Ooh, I've got a lot of them.
Well, just throw a name at me. It doesn't really...
I'm going to throw out Timothy Chalamet.
Who?
Timothy Chalamet.
I do not know who that is. So
he was in the recent Dune movie. He played Paul.
Okay. So if you had an 8 by 11 headshot of him, right? Because, you know, or if you had an 8.5 by 11 headshot of him signed, which one's more desirable? Well, if he writes like me, the blank one, because if your penmanship sucks, it's not, nobody wants to see, you know, gibberish scribbled across. But, and also you don't want to write it across their face. But the point is that if you have an autographed anything of someone, even a, whether they're an A-list blockbuster star or musician or whatever, or just a local celebrity, if you will, having that connection is always, I think, more desirable.
And absolutely, I agree.
I think your audience might appreciate more. They're buying a print to have your art at home and to support you, then your signature might really resonate with them. And if you're already doing it, I think you should just tell them you're doing it.
No, that so makes there, tons there's of
your,
sense to me.
There's I your mean, unsolicited business coaching advice. It's worth what you paid for it. By the way, that you didn't pay anything, so it's not really worth a lot. But yeah, I'm thinking, you know, there's this sense of when I look at your art, and I'm no art critic, but there's this surrealistic, but yet it's got like this sense of whimsy to me.
Yeah, I really like that. I like that description.
You know, and it's not, but then there's a couple here that don't look like they belong, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but like you've got the Warden in Winter Morning, and those look more like old school, you know. So when were those done?
So those ones,
were those Winter earlier Morning, in your career?
I think it was actually in the middle of my career, probably earlier 2021.
Yeah, it's signed 2021. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Warden, I believe, might have been this year or even late 2021. But those ones kind of just, sometimes I like to go back to my roots and do landscapes and kind of see what I can do now compared to what I was doing when I started out. But the piece that you're talking about, the Warden, that one actually has a couple kind of Easter eggs almost in them.
I just think I found them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because I was just looking at the little print on the cart, right?
Yeah.
Like when I'm looking at all your things and it says the Warden, and you really can't tell when you zoom in on it, though. It's like, well, wait a second. There's some toxic waste.
Yeah. Yep. There's like a radioactive barrel there. The farmer is not a person.
No. Yeah.
Let's say like robot or some sort of robotic farmer, because I'm a super big science fiction nerd, so I like to include little things like that in my pieces. Always kind of keep the person guessing what's going on in the piece. Like, what is going on here? Why aren't there any people? Why is there radioactive waste, you know? Why is there a robot tending a farm? Like,
right.
Is there anyone that it needs to feed?
Right. Yeah, good point. Well, you mentioned, you know, science fiction is, you enjoy science fiction, and that's a genre that has so many subsets to it, right? And
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just, you know, you can like this type, but just not like every other thing, but it's still considered science fiction. Who's a couple of authors whose work you enjoy?
Oh, this is a good question. So I really, really like Isaac Asimov. He is probably my favorite science fiction author. And then I really like Kurt Vonnegut and Philip K. Dick. Those three are like probably the top three for me.
Okay.
And there's a lot, there's a bunch of other ones that, I think it was Arthur C. Clarke. He did I can't remember the name of the series at the top of my head, but the one that was turned into a TV series.
I was going to joke and say Firefly, but,
I mean, that's a good one too, but yeah, so Isaac Asimov probably has had the most influence on me because of that kind of retro science fiction. That's what I'm really into. And some of my most recent art pieces have actually been heavily influenced by his work, and then also by artists of that era. So like David A. Hardy has been a huge influence. He's an artist that has done a lot of like covers and magazines and stuff like that. And then there's a few others that I can't think of at the moment, but he's the one that sticks out for sure.
So I would not consider myself a science fiction fan in the sense that I realize I'm probably going to annoy everybody that hears me say the following sentences. I don't enjoy Star Trek. I don't enjoy Star Wars. I just don't. I mean, they leave me flat. The original Star Trek is comical to me. It's just, you know, I think of it as a comedy. It's laughable. I just don't. And I know that that's blasphemy. I know that you're probably just like clenching your fists on off camera right now, just wanting to punch your computer screen, but don't, it's not worth it.
Just a little bit, you know,
yeah.
Star Trek is a
well, it's like
place in my heart.
Okay. So for example, I was a guest on a podcast the other day. We recorded the other day and the host was, and it was nothing to do with like, kind of like our topic here today. We just also, now we're talking TV and movie and had nothing to do. Okay. But he mentioned that he was going to go watch, is it the Obi-Wan? Is that the new?
Yeah, the new Star Wars show on Disney Plus. Yeah, that one.
And I'm like, okay, cool, go. I have zero curiosity about it. Zero. It just doesn't intrigue me at all.
But there's the science nothing fiction, wrong with that. It's just not for you.
No, but people look at me like, I never saw, okay, so... You're much younger than me, but when I was teenagers, when Star Wars first came out, the original first three Star Wars episodes, whatever they were, 4, 5, and 6 in the series or whatever they're supposed to be, that always baffled me. I never saw them when they came out in the theaters. I never saw them the first time. The first time I saw them was on a VHS tape.
Wow.
And I watched it on a small TV and went, it's the big deal. And then I went, when Northgate had a theater, and they re-released them back out, you know, you could go watch them, and I went and watched them, and they were better, but it just isn't my jam. Okay, that's all. But I really like reading William Gibson.
Okay,
yeah, that's you know, cyberpunk, you know, this dystopian near future stuff.
Well, then you probably really like the Blade Runner series.
Blade Runner was great. I love Blade Runner.
Blade Runner is huge to me. I love Blade Runner.
I love Blade Runner. But see, but like Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica.
Those are more like the space operas in a sense. Like that's
It just isn't my thing. I just, you know, and that's okay. I mean, I'm just,
of course,
you know, I always like to know where people are getting their inspiration from, because yours is a little more, you know, Isaac Asimov is, you know, older. Not something, you know, ripped from today's space headlines, if you will.
Well, you know, I mean, Isaac Asimov is like the basis for so many other science fiction concepts. I mean, even, you know, Star Wars heavily influenced by Isaac Asimov's like Foundation series, and obviously there's the iRobot movie, and that's an Isaac Asimov.
And that one was okay.
That was good. That's kind of up your alley of that kind of cyberpunk ish.
Yeah, I kind of like the cyberpunk stuff, and you know, I do. Now here's one. I'll say this, and this episode isn't about me, but I'm curious to see what your reaction is to this.
Okay, let's go.
There was a comic book, I think it was, or no, excuse me, it was a cartoon series. I think it came out in the 90s. I never watched it. But there was a Netflix series just done. Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, okay.
Let me finish before you react.
Yeah.
I actually liked the Netflix series. Was it perfect? No. But it was enjoyable. One of my dear friends, in fact, the guy editing this podcast, couldn't stand it because it wasn't true to the cartoon series, which I'd never watched. What's your take on that?
Well, I'll be honest. I have not seen the Netflix series, but I have watched all of the original animated show and have loved it. I mean, that's peak sci-fi right there.
Right. Everybody that I've talked to that's watched the original cartoon is like, this just sucked. I can't believe they just destroyed it. They blew it, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I watched a couple of episodes of the cartoon afterwards, and I I still think the Netflix show held up okay. I mean, it was just what it was. It was just kind of a semi-humorous look at the future. Flying cars and you know, old 50s cars flying around. You know, it's just interesting.
I love the whole concept for sure.
Yeah. And I can see where your art could be influenced by those things.
Yeah.
You know. But I'm also looking at your art and I'm looking at the inversion of Sampo.
Yep. Yeah, that one I just posted on my website this morning, actually.
Coming soon.
Yep.
And that's both futuristic and historic. At the same time. And the tree looks happy. Just going to say.
It does. It does look happy, doesn't it?
It looks happy. So this, let's talk about this since this is coming soon.
Yeah.
The original. What have you done with your, did the original sell?
So that one was actually a custom commission piece. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know anything about Finnish folklore.
I do not.
So the Sampo is like a magical object in Finnish folklore that was created by is a guy called Ilmarinen, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
And he was like this blacksmith. He created this magical, it's like a mill. So you put stuff in it and you grind it up and then out pops out anything you want because it's magical. So
kind of like alchemy then, if you will.
Yeah, so you put in like rocks and then gold comes out, or you put in water, wine comes out. And the folklore behind it is basically like his whole village was prosperous and then it got stolen. And then there's a bunch of art picturing like the recovery of the Sampo. And that's kind of where my inspiration for that piece was. And then I put it in my own world. And so that's where that came from. The guy that commissioned it in Finland actually wanted me to include some Finnish folklore, and that's the idea that we came up with. And I think I really enjoyed making his concept come to life. So that's what that is all about, basically.
Wow, this is really interesting to me because I'm looking at on your site. You have the inverted version is the first picture.
Yep.
Right. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, there's not a lot of detail in the guy. That's just my initial first thought.
Yeah.
Oh, there's not a lot of detail in the guy. And honestly, I was like a little like, oh, I wish there was more. That was my initial reaction. Okay. I am trying to actually quote unquote paint a picture here. And then I click on the other image and then all of a sudden there's all the detail that I wished was there.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. That's a really cool. To see it like that is very, very cool. Although I will say, the tree doesn't look quite as happy in the second version. Just doesn't. I kid. No, that's really cool. So that's something that's coming out. And so that was a commission piece that you did for somebody in Finland.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. The last time I looked at a map, a globe, or just paid attention to the world. You live in Seattle and Finland's far away.
Yeah, it's just a little bit far away, you know, just a few miles.
So how did this person find you? Was it literally your website they found you on, or?
It was probably either my Instagram or my TikTok.
Oh, really?
I do a lot of the TikToking, you know?
Okay. All right, let's go there because I don't. I've been joking lately. I say I'm still on AOL, but TikTok. How on earth are you promoting yourself? Because my awareness of TikTok is people doing choreographed dances, or
I knew that's what you were gonna say,
or some attempt at being funny in a 30-second clip. So how are you promoting your art on TikTok?
So like you're saying, I think a lot of people when they think of TikTok, especially if they're not avid users of TikTok, they'll be like, oh, isn't that the dancing app, you know, for kids and stuff? And that's actually not true. I mean, that's partially true. There is a lot of that on there. But TikTok is an amazing place to promote anything, whether it's your art or your small business or whatever you want, your podcast. And for me,
I'm not going to dance. Just telling you,
I'm not going to do it. I don't dance on there either. So maybe sometimes, but very rare occasions.
Oh, very rare occasions. Okay. Only if the wine was involved. Okay.
Yeah. There might have been wine involved. But honestly, I just started posting my art on there. Just videos. Maybe I did some like little short process videos. So I was showing like little brush strokes and then the finished piece at the end. Something like that. With music to it, of course. And really from there, that's where my my TikTok blew up a bit. So I've got a decent following on there. And
by decent, what do you mean?
A little over 600,000.
Excuse me? Did you say 600 or 600,000?
600,000.
Wow. Okay.
So that definitely helps promote art, having a nice little following.
Wow.
And I like to do videos of my negative paintings where I'll hold them up and then I'll do like a little snap and then the filter will come over and then you can see what it looks like in the filter. And those videos do really well. People really like them. And I think some people don't actually understand what's going on because they're like, whoa, did you turn the black light on? Like what happened? Said, no, there's a filter over the screen. So that's pretty much how I use my TikTok. Just posting my art. And sometimes I'll post, like, if I get a print order that comes in, I'll do the unboxing video. And I'll take all the prints out and show them off. Be like, yeah, here they are. And stuff like that. Am I blowing your mind over there?
You're in your 20s, right?
Yes, I'm 26.
Okay. So my daughter's 27. And my daughter, Mackenzie, runs our social media channels.
Correct.
And I think her favorite saying to me these days is, okay, boomer. And basically, I think I've been on TikTok twice. I think, you know, I look at our Instagram occasionally. I don't look at it very often. My thing is I do the podcast, the newsletter, email, the stuff that moves slower, dare we say.
Yeah.
So first off, when you say you have 600,000 followers or whatever they're called on TikTok, that's impressive. Earlier on, we had recorded an episode with a woman who has a talking dog who lives in Tacoma.
Bunny, right?
Bunny. And at that time, that dog had over multiple, like 2 or 3 million followers. And yeah. I was just like, are you kidding me? I that blew me away. And we had earlier a guy out of Washougal who's the blind woodsman.
Oh, that's cool.
And he videos himself working a lathe, which I just find fascinating that a blind guy is using, you know, power tools. You almost want to tune in just to see. But TikTok has been, I mean, he's got a huge, huge, huge following on TikTok. And people, I've said, I was talking to my granddaughter and I said, oh, I want to talk to this guy, he goes by the Blind Woodsman. And she goes, oh, I know him. I've watched his stuff. And I'm like, what? You know, and so I'm going to acknowledge that TikTok is not something that's, you know, my thing.
And that's okay.
And it's okay. But so, long rambling way to ask this question. I get the idea. I love the idea of you showing brush strokes and then the final print. I think that, to me, that's like, that makes sense to me. Like, that's like, from a marketing standpoint, from a promotional standpoint, from a interesting to watch standpoint, that makes sense to me. It does.
Yeah.
I love the idea of you showing the negative and then applying the filter. That's almost like magic. That's a parlor trick. It's cool. But then you said you do your unboxings. And that one, because just earlier today, before you and I started recording this, Mackenzie said, because we just got some new stickers.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, have you taken any pictures of them? I go, no, not yet. Haven't had time. Haven't unboxed them. She goes, oh, I want you to record yourself unboxing them. And the first thought through my head was, why? Why? Who wants to watch me open a box with stickers in
it? You'd be surprised. You would be surprised.
So are you telling me that your unboxing of a package of prints is TikTok worthy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what it is about unboxing things, but people just love to see it. I think it's the
almost like Christmas experience. I mean, we're vicariously, we're vicariously watching somebody get a present, if you will. I like watching like unboxing of like computer equipment, or you know, I'm unboxing my new digital camera, and you know, because I'm thinking about buying that digital camera, so yeah. I want to like see like, well, what does it look like? How, you know, how's the packaging? Blah blah blah, but. Stickers left me flat. I was like, really? And then now you're telling me you're unboxing prints, which no offense to your prints, it doesn't seem particularly interesting either. But you're telling me you do that. Good for you. Okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's good for people to see that, like seeing you open it up for the first time and seeing your reaction, or seeing them brand new and you open it up and you're taking the plastic off and they're like, oh, that's really cool. Like I'm looking at it for the first time kind of thing. And I think you could do that with your stickers too. I mean, it sounds kind of mundane, but it's something small. You just post on your social media and be like, hey, look, we got these new stickers came in. Look how they look. They just,
I don't know if AOL has an ability for me to post.
Yeah. You might have to check with that.
So, all right, you've got, this is, and I warned you when we talked about you being on the show, who knows the direction this will go. And I didn't think it would go where we're going with it. I can't seem to not like get off this trail. So I apologize if
no worries.
This isn't what, but so you got 600,000 ish, TikTok followers.
Uh-huh.
And you, what was the last thing you shared on TikTok?
I think the last thing I shared was one of my paintings I did recently, and I just kind of like stood there and then I revealed it. So I had it like kind of out of frame, and then I just brought it in and just showed it off. And it was like a 7-second video. And that's it.
All right. How many times has that been watched?
I think that one was, I'd have to look. It's probably only been viewed about 2,000 to 3,000 times, which, you know, isn't like a whole lot considering the amount of followers, but it really depends on the video too.
Okay. So first off, did you hear what you just said? You just kind of said, 2,000, 3,000 times. That's not that much. Can you imagine? No, seriously. Think about this. In traditional methods, you're standing on a street corner holding up your piece of art.
Yeah.
How long would you have to stand there for somebody to look up, for it to be observed 2,000 or 3,000 times?
Probably, you know, a couple of days at least.
or you have your piece of art hung in a public space, whether it be a restaurant or a gallery. How long is it going to be before your art was exposed to 2,000 or 3,000 people?
Definitely a while, that's for sure.
And so think about that. Now, so the other question, part two of my question then is, what's your most viewed TikTok?
I believe my most viewed TikTok was around 15.6 million views.
Okay, now do the math standing on a street corner.
I can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Mind-boggling.
I mean, it's staggering how the exposure that we can all get
absolutely
from these platforms. And I would not have thought that unboxing your art or... Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that one. I get the paint stroke one. That's kind of cool. So the most viewed, the 15.6, what was that?
That one was one of my negative pieces. I believe it was either Negative Trek or Negative Voyage. So one of those ones, both of those have around the same amount of views, actually.
Now, do you have any methodology? Once again, business question. But do you have any methodology in tracking sales that come because of TikTok? Views to your site because of social?
The site that I have doesn't really like to tell me where all of the people came from. I guess I could check on TikTok, and I think there's a way you can look and see how many people have clicked your link in your bio and stuff.
Right.
But that wouldn't like directly correlate to sales or anything. But I guess I could do some sort of percentage.
But do you see a direct correlation between an unboxing, let's say, and orders?
Oh, absolutely. If I do an unboxing video and I post it on, say, TikTok and Instagram, I can definitely tell that people will watch it because I'll sell, even if it's like one or two prints, you know, I'm like, okay, well, people actually saw the video because I just posted it and they just ordered that print. So I can assume that's why.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll try to pull myself off the business nuts and bolts and we'll go back to the creative. Be creative because, you know, that's more you.
But I mean, the business aspect of being an artist is a huge part of it, too. It's not all the creative, especially now that I'm full time.
So now that you're full time. All right. Thank you. Great transition. What's next? What do you envision for the next, from today out a year or so? Because you can't forecast beyond that, really. But
it's true.
So what do you want to do?
I have a lot of things I want to do. Something I've wanted to do for a while is really build up my YouTube channel. I know YouTube is a little older now, but it's still a good platform for artists.
Was that a dig?
Maybe not intentionally, but... But yeah,
the appropriate response would have been if you had to ask, then yes. Okay, so what will you do? What do you want to do with your YouTube channel?
So with YouTube, I can do a lot longer videos. TikTok recently did give me the option to do 10-minute videos, which is pretty amazing. But mm-hmm. YouTube, obviously, I can do pretty much as long as I want. And my idea is I want to do kind of tutorials, maybe not unlike Bob Ross, but do kind of like you could do a follow along paint with me, mm-hmm. or maybe do some vlogs where I just talk about what's going on, like what's going on with my art, what kind of events am I doing, mm-hmm. what projects am I working on. And I can really go more in depth on YouTube just with the amount of time that I would have and just kind of build that up. I just think that sounds like a lot of fun rather than just posting 7-second videos. So people don't really get to know me, the person mm-hmm. behind the art.
Well, and that's absolutely true, is people get to know you more. There'll be a deeper connection.
Yeah.
So it just clicks on something else here. Out of time, holographic. The photograph doesn't look that much different to me than your other art. I don't know if the photographs are displaying the holographic nature of it, or am I glaringly overlooking something?
Let's see, out of time, I'm going to look at it too, because it's been a while since I've looked at that one. Okay, so the holographic aspect of it, if you kind of look at the varying pictures of it, you can see like the little speckles of holographic. So that's what's different about it.
Okay.
And it's a lot higher quality print and more expensive to get. That's why it's a little bit pricier. And there's so many of them.
Right.
But those ones are really cool. I really like them. They look super cool when you're like just holding them up, and even when they're just on the wall and you're walking by, it really changes the whole piece.
Okay.
And I think it flows really well with a lot of my space pieces, having them be holographic like that.
Okay. All right. Thematically, what do you want to do in the upcoming? Where are you going these days with your art? The style of it. What? How are you evolving?
I feel like I'm bringing back a lot more of those technical aspects that I was kind of learning in architectural design, especially with some of this retro kind of science fiction art that I've started to make. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to that age-old perspective, and I really want to do like book cover-esque kind of science fiction art. I think that would be ideal. And hopefully maybe even in the future actually have a real book cover or magazine cover. I have had my art inside of magazines, just never as a cover.
Okay.
But that would be
What magazines have covered you in print?
I was published in the Artist Astonish magazine, I believe, in April 2022. And then I was also published in the Utopia Science Fiction magazine back in 2021.
Nice. All right.
And then there's some other magazines that I'm aspiring to be published in. I think one of them is Birdie magazine. That's a pretty big one. If I could remember the name, it's Infinite Worlds magazine. I've got a copy over here.
Is your work ever displayed locally in the Seattle area?
Yes. Last month and the month prior, I had my art up at Verity Credit Union over in the Greenwood area.
Nothing says art like credit union.
Yeah. But
all kidding aside, how did you place your art in a credit union? It just seems like it makes sense because people are going into the lobby. That makes sense. But
yeah.
But did you go up to the teller and say, "Hi, I'd like to make a withdrawal and put my art in, and I'd like to put three pieces on the wall"? Or
so
how did that work?
For this, in this case, I kind of had it in because my friend works there. And him and the manager are nice to each other, you know?
Right.
And the manager reached out and was like, "We would really like to have your art up." And I was like, "Yeah, that would be awesome." And
that's very
cool.
So
that's kind of how that happened. And there's like a little art walk that happens there on the second Friday of every month. So for those 2 months that it was there, I was part of that art walk, which was pretty cool. And just hung up my art all around their credit union. It's not like the usual kind of bank vibe that you would get mm-hmm. from a space that there's a bank in.
Right.
They have a really cool area, like this lit area where you can hang a pretty nice size piece of art. And so I put one of my large pieces there, and then they've got a lot of wall space, and then they've got kind of like these display windows, almost like if you were going into like a retail store or something, you know, like where they got display windows. And so I put my art in there as well. And it was a pretty cool experience overall.
All right. Good. Good. When you're not painting, when you're not being an artist, what do you guys like to do for fun and excitement?
Oh, that's another great question. Well, my fiance and I like to go on hikes, so we haven't really done as many recently because of the baby. We're trying to bring her out more often.
Mm-hmm.
We like to do that. We also like to just visit with family. So whether it's in Utah or here, because my fiance is from Utah, so we'll go over there and visit with her family. And we used to do hikes over there a lot, too. So there's a lot of amazing like national parks over there that we would go visit. Visit with friends.
So like, okay. Well, yeah, art and wine, you know, well, that was family. So give me an example of some hikes that you guys like to do.
Around Seattle, there's some kind of like more local, just like we live right next to Carkeek Park. And mm-hmm. I know that's not like a huge hike, but it's still really pretty, and just walking through it, it's kind of amazing that that's just in Seattle. Like, it doesn't feel like you're in the city when you get further in the park. It just feels like you're on a hike. I mean, you can occasionally hear city sounds, and there's airplanes flying over and stuff. But when you forget all that, you're like, oh, this is nice. I don't think I'm in the city.
Right.
And the beach is right there. So we just walk down to the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to, many years ago, used to live by Carkeek as well, so.
Awesome.
Long time ago. All those big tall trees that are in Carkeek now, those were all like little saplings. It was that long ago. Do you drink coffee?
Oh, absolutely. I'm drinking coffee right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I also saw you were, you know, it's a cat, you know, your cat. What is your mug? Oh, is it cat owner, cat parent?
It says
mug?
Cat dad.
Cat dad. Yeah. So coffee and a cat dad mug? So where's some good coffee up in there, up in your neck of the woods?
I mean, we really don't go out to coffee that often, but...
What? Come on. You live in Seattle. Well,
we like to brew.
Didn't you have to like sign an oath that you would like drink 6 cups of coffee from, you know, coffee shops a day to live in King County? I thought that was required.
Yeah, it's definitely a requirement. We're kind of under the quota.
Oh, sorry, we didn't mean to out you.
But when I lived over closer to the Northgate area, and we are kind of close to that now, but a Jewel Box Cafe was a pretty good hotspot for my fiance and I. That's where we had our first date as well.
Okay.
We loved going there a lot. They have...
Where is that at?
So do you know like the Thornton Place kind of area where the movie theater's at?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's right there in that kind of like area. So there's like a subway there and whatnot. But Jewel Box Cafe is right there. And they have really good like panini sandwiches, wraps. So we would always get like breakfast wraps and stuff like that when we go. And there's occasional times where I still miss going there because we don't really go there as often. I mainly stay at home and watch the baby and do my art.
Right. And has how much has having the child impacted your productivity?
Well, during the day, I don't really do a lot of painting. That's for sure. But I can do more of the business side of things because when it comes to painting, I feel like I really need to get in that headspace. Mm-hmm. And so if I have to take care of my baby, I can't really get fully in that headspace because obviously she needs to be fed or held or whatnot. And I need to like sit down and have like a long period of time to focus on that. But the business side of stuff, like say I'm ordering prints or I'm packaging orders, I can do that because it's just kind of like a small little thing that I can just get done during the day. So I can do that. But productivity wise, I don't feel like it's affected me that much because to be honest, when I was working full time as a file clerk, that's what really impacted my productivity as an artist.
Right. I think the law firm would probably frown on you packaging something in between filing.
Absolutely. Point, you know,
I just have that suspicion. So you mentioned, you know, when you're being creative and you get into that headspace. So for you, what is the creative when you're in the zone? What are you listening to? Music? Are you drinking a ton of coffee? Or, you know, what is it that you're doing that helps you get into the flow?
First of all, yes to both of those.
All right.
I usually play like more ambient music sometimes, but it really depends on the mood I am in that day. Sometimes I'll play like synth wave kind of 80s style music. Sometimes I'll just listen to 80s music. Sometimes I'll listen to modern day like psychedelia or indie. I don't know, it really depends, but I'll put on a playlist. I got my cup of coffee and usually a cup of water as well. Yes, I occasionally have dipped my paintbrush in both of those on accident. Happens a lot.
Oh, did that just ruining the other of day. Coffee. That's the tragedy. You've ruined coffee.
Oh, absolutely. By mixing,
yeah, forget the paint. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, that.
I've even drank my coffee after putting the paintbrush in on accident. Yeah. I was like, why does this taste weird?
I would too. Oh, blue.
Yeah. But
blue doesn't taste very good. The red's better.
Mm. Yeah, the red's better, huh? I've got my little studio in the basement here. And so I'll come down here, put that playlist on, get my coffee going, and just kind of sit down. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll journal before I actually do my sketch or anything. I'll do some journaling and kind of write about like what's going on, how I'm feeling. And that is kind of like a cathartic thing that I do before painting. The painting itself is also pretty cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just get in this zone. It's kind of space out. Sometimes my fiance will come down and like try to talk to me and take her a couple times before I'm like, oh, what? Oh, sorry. I didn't realize you were here. Yeah. Or she'll really scare me. Not on purpose, but like she'll come down and I'll literally jump.
So out of what you just described, I've got two questions. Number one is how many, Are you working on more than one painting at a time?
Oh, yeah. All the time. All the time. There's so more than
one. How many are you typically working on?
Anywhere from 3 to 5. And I got to say, not all of those get finished.
Sure. Sure. No. But I was just wondering if it was, you know, you start from sketch to completion and are you're working in various phases on multiple properties. Okay. Yes. So cool.
And sometimes I don't even sketch at all. Mm-hmm. It depends. If it's a commission, like custom piece, I'll definitely do a sketch because I'll send the client, I'll send them the rough sketch to be like, this is kind of the concept that I'm thinking of and stuff. But if it's just one I'm doing for fun, I'll just kind of sit down, I'll start slapping paint on the canvas and kind of go with the flow, listen to the music. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pieces that have just arisen from that.
So then the other question you mentioned is you journal, you use the word cathartic. Have you ever gone back and when you've completed a piece and then looked at the journal entries corresponding to the time period that you were working on the piece? And do you ever see any connections between the journal entries and the finished art?
Oh, definitely. There's sometimes where I look at how I was feeling that day, and then I look at the painting that came out of that feeling, and there's definitely a connection. You can be like, okay. I was not feeling good that day. I was feeling a little depressed maybe. And the piece that came out of it is definitely representative of that.
Okay. All right. As we wrap this up, my last question for you.
Okay.
What didn't I ask you that I should have?
Maybe like what kind of events I'm doing in the future.
Oh yeah, very good. What so Chris, what events are you got going on in the future?
So, in July.
Good question, Scott. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Thank you. In July, so next month. I don't know when this will come out, but.
This will come out in that time frame, so this might be relevant.
So it might be this month.
Yes.
But I'm going to be at 2 art fairs. So I'm going to do the Wedgwood Art Festival, which I believe is the... Let me check the calendar really quick. Yeah, that's going to be the 9th and 10th of July.
The 9th and 10th of July 2022.
Correct. And the... Alki Art Festival or Art Fair, is going to be the 23rd and 24th of July. And so I'll be at both of those. It's going to be a busy, busy month.
Yeah. Okay. And anything else in the future after that you got on the books?
In between those, my fiance and I are getting married.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. There's no stress there.
There's a little bit of stress, but it's not as bad as it could be because we're having a very small wedding. It's actually going to be in my parents' beautiful backyard. And we're just inviting very immediate family because we've waited way too long. So we joked about getting a cake that says effin' finally on it.
Love it. I love it. Okay. Well, congratulations in advance for that.
Thank you so much.
And also, you know, kudos to you on your art and making it something that allows you to not be a file clerk.
Yes.
And allows you to be a stay-at-home parent. That's an opportunity
that's huge for us.
You will always look back on and go, that was very cool. Glad I got to do that. And in the moment, you may not appreciate that. In any given moment, like, a diaper might not make you smile, but
yeah, they rarely do, but
right. But in the future, trust me on this, in the future, you'll look back on this period of time and go, I'm really glad I did that. You'll appreciate that. And I look forward to seeing more of your art. I think what you're doing is really cool. I like the way you're doing the double-sided prints. I think that's a really, very good use of a way of displaying your art. It's almost like, you know, like those shirts that you can wear inside out, wear them inside out, you know, but it's a good use of that. It's some flexibility for people. And, thank you for, taking the time to be on the show with me today.
Of course. I had a good time.
Join us next time for another episode of the Exploring Washington State podcast.